Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line from the East Coast, Kenneth Timmerman. We're going to be talking about his latest book, The French Betrayal of America. Mr. Timmerman, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, Stan, it's a pleasure to be with you again.
Well, of course, I didn't realize you'd spent a lot of time living in France in the past.
Yes, it was just terrible torture.
Were you over there working for a newspaper, or was it?
I was indeed. I was working for a variety of papers, for the Atlantic Constitution in the early 80s. Then I worked for Newsweek for a while, and I worked for a whole series of defense magazines. And that was great fun and games, because it allowed me to go back and forth between Paris and Baghdad, where I got the opportunity to meet just about every French arms dealer who was selling weapons to Saddam Hussein.
And I think it's really so interesting that, as you point out in your book, that even after the United Nations embargo, why the French continued selling weapons to Saddam Hussein in violation of all the laws of international laws.
Well, they did. Now, international laws, I'm not so sure, Stan, that I follow you on that one. It's certainly against the UN regulations that the French signed on.
You're correct. In other words, it was an international agreement that people weren't going to be selling him the things once he was embargoed.
That's right. No, absolutely correct. And I've got some of that information in my new book. The French did it directly. They did it through French companies. They did it through Jordan. The Dassault, the aircraft maker, had a company set up in Jordan that would do spare parts. So yes, there were lots of fronts that were dealing with Saddam after the embargo.
Well, I think what was so interesting is your description of this, of course, of this break between the United States and France over the war with Iraq. And really, of course, what motivated the politicians who really promoted this whole thing. And so, do you want to start? Would you like to start? You tell about the meetings where, of course, the French announced that they were not going to back us, and the French and the Germans basically said, America, you're going to have to do this alone, because we're not going to have anything to do with it.
Yeah, but you know, Stan, that's part of the story of the book, and I'm glad you started me on that, because it was all lies. The French were just lying to us. And I reveal in this book that President Chirac personally lied to President Bush, that the Foreign Minister de Villepin personally lied to Colin Powell, and if they want to get their credibility back, they're going to have to make amends for the lies that they told our leaders.
And, of course, I think it was even more interesting when you got into what was really motivating some of these people. And, of course, unless you understand French history, you can't understand why these men, especially the French foreign minister, would have done what he did. And yet he seems to have delusions of grandeur. And you go into his books that he's written in the past that give you insight into his current thinking. So We'll get
into that, I hope, yes.
Yes, we will. And we'll be back in just a moment with our special guest this afternoon, Kenneth Timmerman, his new book, The French Betrayal of America. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Kenneth Timmerman, and we're going to be talking about his new book, The French Betrayal of America, which has a lot of fascinating information in this, which I was unaware of, and of course goes into the fact that the French primarily, and to a lesser extent the Germans, but that the French had, when it came down to whether or not they were going to back America as far as the war with Iraq was concerned, they were telling the our officials one thing and then doing another, and really embarrassing us publicly. So would you like to get into the background of what happened that President Chirac had actually promised the President of the United States that he would back him, didn't he?
Yes, he did, Stan, and it's a scandalous story, and it hasn't been told before. And I was able to learn about this from a number of different sources. I explained it a bit in the book, who was giving me this information, but it comes from multiple sources on both sides of the Atlantic, I might add. So I'm pretty confident of this version of history. In late October 2002, as Colin Powell was getting ready to go back and renegotiate the 17th UN Security Council resolution that demanded that Saddam Hussein get rid of his weapons of mass destruction and threatened the use of force against him if he did not, the French president, Jacques Chirac, called up George W. Bush in the Oval Office, and he said, "Mr. President, I just want to let you know, I know you're going to hear some of the things that I say in public in France, and you're going to be worried, you're going to be upset, because, you know, they don't all sound very nice for you, but I want to let you know personally, man to man, leader to leader, we're with you. France will be with you when you go to the UN, and France is going to be with you if you have to go against Saddam Hussein with force. And I'm not just talking, I'm going to prove it to you. I'm going to send you one of my top generals. He's going to go to Tampa, Florida, to talk to the United States Central Command about how we can integrate French troops into a U.S.-led coalition to take down Saddam." This was in late October 2002, and 1 week later, the French delivered on the first part of that. They actually did vote on that first, or if you wish, the 17th UN Security Council resolution. And it was just two months after that, in January of 2003, that they said, "Oh, no, that's not at all what we meant. We didn't at all mean to say that we supported the United States and the world community to go after Saddam Hussein if he didn't disarm. We meant that he should have much more time, many more UN inspectors, and never, ever, ever, ever the use of force against Saddam." That's what Dominique de Villepin, the foreign minister, declared in New York on January 20th, 2003. Well, it was all lies. They had lied to the President of the United States.
Hold that thought just for a moment when our other stations join us right now. Okay, this is Dr. Stan, our guest is Kenneth Timmerman, and he's talking about how the French foreign minister had actually lied to Colin Powell and to the President.
And to the President of the United States. And they lied about their participation in the war on Iraq. And I explain this in great detail in my new book, The French Betrayal of America. And I think that this is really what has motivated the chill, if you wish, the transatlantic chill between Washington and Paris. The French would like us to say bygones, let bygones be bygones, but there's really so much bad blood from this personal lying by the French president and by the French foreign minister that I think it's going to take some new faces in Paris for us to get over it.
Well, of course, the thing is that most of the French people opposed the are going to war. That's certainly their prerogative. But of course, the animosity between the French and the Americans has, I think, been kindled on both sides. I mean, the idea that they were going to stop serving French toast, in the congressional dining room and have an American toast and foolish things like this. I mean, this is the most ridiculous, childish thing I ever heard.
Well, I can understand what you're saying, Stan, but let me just give you a little background, and it's in the book, and I think Americans will understand this. It was not just childish; it was an extreme betrayal what the French did to us that led up to this, to the American reaction, and I think that's why you saw this freedom fries and freedom toast and all of that coming out last year. The French had promised us that they would be with us. They had promised the president personally. President Chirac had called up President Bush and promised him in person that France would be with us. The foreign minister was eating dinner with Colin Powell in New York at the Ritz in New York just the night before at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. Just the night before, he gave a press conference where he said France would never, ever back the use of force in Iraq. And he told Colin Powell just the opposite. So there are these lies told to our leaders by the French leaders And I think this is really what motivated the extreme reaction from our government in response. They said, well, the French lied to us. Well, the heck with them.
Well, now, of course, you point out that you feel that there were several reasons why the French opposed going to war. One of them was they had a lot of economic ties to Saddam, and they wanted his oil, and weren't a lot of the French ministers and key people there already getting a lot of money from Saddam Hussein, and they didn't want to see him, at least one of the reasons they didn't want to see him deposed was because of the oil and the money and the goodies they were getting?
That's absolutely right, Stan, and let's just make it very clear here. This was not a war for principle on the part of the French. They did not oppose the war in Iraq on principle. They claimed that that's what it was. They claimed that they felt that we had not yet made the case, that you know we had to get this institutional, international backing to go to war. No, no, that was all a bunch. That was part of the French duplicity and part of their lies. What it was all about was a war for oil. This was a war for oil, but it was not waged by the United States. It was a war for oil waged by Jacques Chirac and the French government for these exclusive oil contracts that they had negotiated with Saddam Hussein that could only go into effect if the French supported Saddam Hussein at the United Nations and got the UN sanctions against Iraq lifted. That was the war for oil. It was waged by France, not the United States.
And, of course, you make the point that certainly France is quite dependent upon oil. In fact, one of the things they really fear is that if there was a shortage of oil, their whole economy would collapse.
Well, that's right. And they suffered dramatically from the 1973-1974 oil crisis. People argue that they've never really recovered from that. The French still have between 10 and 12% on a chronic, regular basis. They do this because they have a socialist economy and there are a number of other reasons. If the United States would allow French people to immigrate into this country, or German people to immigrate into this country freely, there would be such a brain drain as you couldn't imagine. Every entrepreneur from Western Europe, from France and Germany in particular, where they're bound by these socialist regulations, would come here to set up companies and create new wealth.
No, you mean they actually aren't allowed to emigrate?
No, we will not allow them in the country.
Oh, we won't allow them in.
No,
okay.
We will not allow white Europeans to come into America. We have quotas on immigration for white Europeans with brains and money. But, you know, that's part of our immigration laws.
Well, I sometimes think that, we live in a world gone mad. There are only a few of us who are really sane, and everybody thinks we're crazy. Now, one of the things that you point out is the fact that one influencing thing as far as the French was concerned is their large Muslim population. About 10% of their population is Muslim, and these people, many of them are solidly behind Saddam Hussein, and they feared really civil unrest if they came out in favor of the war. Was that a factor?
Yes, I think that was a contributing factor to what President Chirac did in the end, and he was playing to that Muslim population in France, which is a violent population. I mean, they are terrorizing the suburbs. There are whole areas around Paris, towns and cities, housing projects around Paris, with hundreds of thousands of people, where the French police dare not penetrate. And Chirac was worried of a revolt in the streets. It's absolutely clear. But the money was even more important than that.
And, of course, I've read some articles in the Wall Street Journal, and I'm sure you probably have seen these as well, that suggest that, the France was certainly deeply involved with trade with Saddam Hussein, and he was even giving kickbacks in the way of oil to officials in the French government for various favors during the time when, of course, the oil for food program was in place, and he wasn't allowed to do that sort of thing, and everybody seemed to sit back and allow it to take place.
Well, that's right, and I talk about the oil for food arrangement a lot in The French Betrayal of America, my new book, and I examined 2,600 contracts that the UN let during this period, $50 billion worth of commerce. The United States and Britain were the only countries that objected to any of these contracts, and they said that they objected to something like 1,700 of them, if my memory is correct, and And their objections were that we're worried that some of this technology, some of the equipment, could go into Saddam Hussein's weapons programs, agricultural sprayers, which had specific dimensions that could be used to disperse dried anthrax, for instance. That was one of the items that they were very concerned about. And I talked to French companies that were selling that equipment to Saddam Hussein, and they were very thankful to President Jacques Chirac of France because he pushed forward a liberalization of the oil for food program in 2002 that allowed them to sell just about anything to Saddam. So I've got a lot of that information in the book. It's a big scandal because there was money and kickbacks and bribes and payoffs, probably 10% of the total and maybe more.
Somebody called it not oil for food, but oil for palaces, referring to Saddam's palaces he was building during that time. So he really wasn't hurting. The people might be suffering, but not our good friend Saddam Hussein.
Good point. And it was oil for palaces and oil for weapons.
Right.
Because he was using the kickbacks and the set-aside money to buy equipment for his weapons of mass destruction.
And I really think that's one of the real strong points of your book. It's got a lot of information there that I haven't read elsewhere, or that I have read elsewhere, but I wouldn't know where to put my hands on it. And, of course, it's all well consolidated here. Then, of course, you get on into some of the things. You get into a little bit about Chirac, and he's a man who's really got a very, very shady past. Now, Chirac is the current, prime minister?
The president of France.
All right.
And by the way, Stan, he'd better be president for life, because the minute he gets out of the Élysée Palace, he risks going to jail on corruption charges.
And, of course, he's actually, he should be in jail now, shouldn't he? How did he avoid going to prison for corruption?
Well, this is one of those great stories. I can't tell everything here in just a couple of minutes, but let me just give listeners a little glimpse of what they're going to find about Chirac. In 1999, he was on the verge of being indicted and for corruption charges. He was president of France at that point. And to keep himself out of jail, he cut a deal with one of his opponents, Jolon Dumas, who had been the socialist foreign minister, and Chirac is supposed to be a center-right president. I think, actually, he's a radical socialist. Anyhow, he cut a deal with Jolon Dumas, the foreign minister, who then was the head of the Supreme Court of France. And Dumas was also about to go to jail on corruption charges. So they basically, two crooks got together from opposing parties and said, hey, I won't go after you if you don't go after me, and they cut a deal, and they're both home free today.
Well, it's a pretty sad commentary on what's gone on in France. What once was a great nation, and now, of course, it's really well on the way down to depravity.
Stan, one of my best friends in France, who's a member of the parliament and who is a strong believer in freedom, he's a supporter of freedom, he loves America, and he loves the alliance that we have had in the past, he said France has become a banana republic.
I know. Well, of course, you get on into what really motivates this this foreign minister, and you're going to have to give me his name. It's
Villepin.
I have a hard time pronouncing some of these names. But, you know, certainly, here's a man who has real delusions of grandeur. He's written about this in his writings, and you refer to him as more of a Machiavellian individual who would like to bring back the grandeur of Napoleon and Charles de Gaulle to France. And, of course, he feels that somehow he can do that by standing up against the United States at this time in history. So when we get back, I'm going to ask you if you'll sort of develop that idea, because this, I think, gives you some insight into the thinking of this man, one of the major molders of French foreign policy as they take their position against the United States and the war in Iraq. We'll be back here in just a moment with Kenneth Timmerman, and we're talking about the French betrayal of the United States. Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident?
There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here. And I wanted to mention that we carry something called Miracle 2 soap products, and we can't make any health claims on this at all, but I will tell you that an awful lot of people who use these products tell us that they really seem to help your rashes, your acne, or things of that sort. Some of the people who take the neutralizer have told me it helps the upper gas and intestinal tract, epigastric burning, and others tell us it helps the lower intestinal tract. But what I would like to suggest is you might like to try these products. I can tell you we've used them, my wife and I, for a couple of years, and I wouldn't be without them. There's a gel and a lotion and a neutralizer, which is a very alkaline solution, a soap and a moisturizing soap. So if you'd like to learn more about Miracle 2 soap products, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and ask for an introductory offer to Miracle 2. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Kenneth Timmerman, and we're talking about his book, The French Betrayal of America. And, of course, you know, if you go into the background of the relationship between America and France, why, we've always been very close, going back to the time of the Revolutionary War and then, of course, to America's coming to France's aid during the First World War and the Second World War. And now, of course, there is a barrier between these countries, really based upon Chirac and then the foreign minister that we've been talking about. And so would you like to talk a little bit about why these people, this idea of trying to restore France's grandeur by opposing the United States?
Well, I will. Let me see if I can try to explain that for some of our listeners, Stan. It's not always so easy. Dominique de Villepin, the foreign minister, wrote a 500-page book about Napoleon's 100-day quest to return to power after he had been exiled to the island of Elba. This was after the Battle of Waterloo, and he's exiled, and then he comes back. And while Napoleon was gone while he was in Elba, his supporters back in France would wear a flower on their lapel called the discreet violet, right? And this was a sign of their fidelity to Napoleon. So Dominique de Villepin, in the beginning of this book about Napoleon, writes the following. He says, "Not a day goes by that I don't inhale the perfume of the discreet violet." Now, this is a man who is today the foreign minister of France. He's a grown man. He's not an adolescent. And he's writing, first of all, such purple prose, but then he's also he's basically revealing to us his adoration of Napoleon and his belief that France should return to this authoritarian system of government where you just basically jail your opponents, cut off their heads when you can, have a centralized government that sends hundreds of thousands of young men off to war, as Napoleon did in the gates of Moscow, and sends them to their death with no help, no hope whatsoever of ever surviving. I mean, it's an incredible vision for today's France, a modern-day country in Europe on the cusp of change. And I think what de Villepin shows in his writings, and I've tried to give my readers a little flavor for that in The French Betrayal of America, what he shows is that France just can't adapt to the 21st century. They don't understand the changing modern world, and they're afraid of it, and they want to turn back the clock to this authoritarian model.
Well, do you really think that the average Frenchman wants that, or do you think that that is simply this ruling elite?
Absolutely, the ruling elite, Stan. You're right about that.
And, of course, this is the great tragedy, that you have people in positions of power who really would think this way. And when you stop and think of, you know, this idea of returning to an authoritarian system and the glories of the Napoleonic era, but the era of the French kings before that, and then we realize that these people are making major decisions that can impact not only the French people, but upon us. It's a little scary.
It is indeed a little scary. I like to say that you know, France is a divided country, a bit as the United States is a divided country, and there are two parts to France. There are those who, during the, for instance, the Nazi occupation, who supported the Vichy government. There are those who took on their French police uniforms and willingly, without anybody forcing them to do so, went and rounded up French Jews and sent them off to the concentration camps. And then there was another part of the French population that joined the resistance, that went underground, that suffered and that took incredible risks to be able to liberate the country from the Nazis. And I think you still see this in France today, the difference, the clash between the collaborationists. And I would argue that they are typified by Jacques Chirac and Dominique de Villepin, these people who love dictatorships and love to do backdoor deals with authoritarian regimes, and the resistance fighters who believe in freedom.
Well, I'm sure that there are people all over the world who have this vision of freedom, and of course who envy us here in America, where we've had such freedom for so many years. And of course, my concern is that the freedoms that our fathers and grandfathers had seems to be fast fading here in America. So our job is, of course, to try to get people to understand history, to understand what's happening, to realize that freedom is something that everyone cherishes, but I think that the people perhaps who've lost it cherish it far more than the average American who just takes it for granted. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two with our special guest this afternoon, Kenneth Timmerman. His book, The French Betrayal of America, is a fascinating insight into what goes on behind the scenes. And, of course, Mr. Timmerman has an opportunity to have met a lot of these people, to talk to them, to talk to people in key positions. And, of course, there are many people who are very pro-American over there. But, of course, when your leaders are anti-American, why, you have to, well, your job is in jeopardy if you try to fight them. We'll be right back in just a moment.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the unnecessary epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine. The fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level. And the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the unnecessary epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I want to tell you about the Berkey water filters, and certainly we carry both the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light. Now, the Big Berkey is a water filter. It's made of stainless steel. They've been used for 150 years. Put a couple of gallons of water in the top, and it goes down and runs down through ceramic filters that are packed with activated carbon. Water comes out the bottom. You've removed most of the pesticides and herbicides and the bacteria, and you've got drinkable water. And certainly missionaries have used this and have been able to maintain their health for a long period of time. The Big Berkeys are $239, and of course they're available here in every state in the Union except for California and Iowa. If you'd like to see pictures of them, you can go to our website at radioliberty.com. Now, if you'd like to get a filter that you could use here in California that would really clean up your water and take out a lot of the chlorine taste, if you want to get the fluoride out, you have to get special filters, and you can get them for either the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light. But if you'd like to get a Berkey Light, it's made of Lexan. It's the same material you make bulletproof glass out of. So you can actually see the water level. The filters are really much more efficient. We call them Black Berkey filters, and we call them water purifiers rather than simply water filters. And the Berkey Light is $199, and of course, if you buy them from us, you either get a 4-tape set or a video that we've actually produced. And so if you'd like to see pictures of them, you go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. War, and call right now. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. We have Nathan on the line. Nathan, do you have a question for our guest today? Nathan?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes,
go ahead.
I do. This is an excellent program. Listen, you know, after all that has been said and done, after the French and the Germans embarrassed our country and the UN and all the rest of it, why on earth would the administration be working right alongside with France in essentially fulfilling the Napoleonic dream of reconquering Haiti? Why on earth would we be trying to overthrow the elected system there right along with these maniacs you're talking about?
All right, fine. And of course, apparently the French were somewhat involved with Aristide. Do you have any thoughts on that, Mr. Timmerman?
Well, yes, no, I'm glad. I appreciate the question. And in fact, what the French originally wanted to do was to send 4,000 troops in there to keep Aristide in power, because they appreciated his corrupt form of government. That's the way that the French operate. I actually wrote an op-ed just before the U.S. put the kibosh on all this, and I said, my gosh, don't we remember that there's something called the Monroe Doctrine to keep foreign powers out of our backyard in the Caribbean? Now, you may or may not like the idea that the United States considers the Caribbean to be our backyard, but there is something such as called the Monroe Doctrine that was to keep Spain, France, and Britain from causing trouble and fomenting revolutions and fomenting revolts in those countries. At any rate, the French backed off. The U.S. said, you will not send troops into Haiti. And Aristide resigned because of the pressure upon him, and we helped him save his life, actually, to evacuate him before he was assassinated by some of the rebels.
All right, now, one of the things you start out the book with, you talk about the case of Zacharias Massui, who was the 20th hijacker, at least this is what he's been said to have been, the man who, of course, we were told, wanted to learn to fly a 747. He didn't want to know how to take off or land. He just wanted to know how to fly it, and they figured maybe he was a hijacker and was going to crash the plane into something, and so he was arrested. But you were commenting that the French had extensive records on this man, and they tried to turn a lot of their information over to our government. And of course, would you like to tell that story? Because it sort of makes you sort of wonder sometimes what's really going on in Washington, D.C.
And in Paris, it's an important story. Over the many years I was in Paris, I had the privilege to become close to the top French counterterrorism judge, Jean-Louis Bruguière. I did a profile on him in Reader's Digest a couple of years ago, and I've done many, many stories with him in the past, in Time magazine and elsewhere. He's a patriot of his own country, but he's always also somebody who loves America and who's tried to help America in the past. In other terrorism cases, he has come to this country and actually testified in court to send terrorists behind bars. He's brought evidence into court to convict people. In this case, I went to see him just a couple of weeks after September 11, and he was thrilled. He said, boy, we have got terrific information for your country on the Moussaoui case. And he proceeded to tell me what he could tell me. Obviously, he couldn't tell me the chapter and verse of it, but what he could tell me. And he said, you know, I've got stuff. We've been tracking Moussaoui for years. We know all about his trips to Afghanistan. We know about his contacts with bin Laden. We know precisely where he fits into the Al-Qaeda spider's web, and I can't wait to give it to the prosecutors in America. And he was really happy about the prospect of doing this. Well, lo and behold, a couple of weeks later, the French Ministry of Justice got wind of this, and they said to him, you will not go to the United States and turn over this information to U.S. prosecutors so that they can use it in the court of law. You will not do this. And so the French have been claiming, through all of the problems they've had with America and the betrayal at the United Nations last year, they've been claiming, oh, well, we still have this great cooperation on counterterrorism. In fact, that, too, is just a lie. And their top counterterrorism judge was not permitted to give the information that he had, and he was willing to give, to a U.S. court of law.
No, I think it's really interesting that the French have been studying this whole Islamic terrorist movement for a very long time, and they realized it was a real danger, and that these people had infiltrated all the countries of Europe, and that they were planning to try to disrupt the countries. And I'm sure they knew that they intended direct attacks on these nations.
Absolutely. And, you know, this particular French counterterrorism judge showed me several years before 9/11, information that he had gathered on Al-Qaeda, which I can tell you was far in advance of what the FBI or the CIA had at that point. He was one of the first people Western intelligence expert. He's an investigative magistrate, but he had access to all of the assets of French intelligence. They were on the ground in Pakistan, on the ground in Afghanistan, as of 1984 and 1985, well before we were doing this. And he had access to this, and he was willing to share it with us. He was the first person that I know of who talked about bin Laden's worldwide spider's web. That's what he liked to call it, Al-Qaeda. He called it a spider's web. And the French government stopped him from cooperating with us after 9/11.
Well, now, of course, do they have people, agents planted within Al-Qaeda feeding them information?
They did at that point. They did prior to 9/11, and I can't tell you that they do today. You know, we heard just a couple of days ago that there was a French general who said, well, we just about caught bin Laden in Afghanistan. Excuse me. The French have got 200 troops in Afghanistan, and I can tell you even more than that. Again, this is another area where the French said, well, we've been cooperating with the Americans. We're willing to fight the war against Al-Qaeda. We just don't like the war against Iraq. And this is so much hooey, it's not funny. When the French defense minister came to NATO to discuss the original deployments in Afghanistan in October and November of 2001, she said, "Well, we are willing to help you in Afghanistan, but we're going to bring." And he dumped these plastic helicopters on the table. He said, "We're going to give you these helicopters, but don't expect the real thing."
What do you mean? Was this just...
The defense minister said, "We're going to give you toy helicopters, but not the real thing. We're not going to give you real stuff to go into Afghanistan." Jacques Chirac, in his great worldly wisdom and his nuance, his command of nuance and sophistication, which is what the French always claim, right? He said, "We're going to help you in Afghanistan," and he announced to all the world that he was sending troops to Mazar-e-Sharif in that pocket in Afghanistan controlled by the Shiites close to the Iranian border. Well, guess what? Lo and behold, the French were delayed for 3 weeks in, I believe it was Turkmenistan, while they waited to get transit permits from the government, because they hadn't even cleared the arrival of their own soldiers with the governments who had to clear them in. I mean, it was just ridiculous. The French didn't help us in Afghanistan.
Well, of course, I think the French have sort of these delusions of grandeur of the past. At one time, they had a colonial empire, and that's pretty well gone. Occasionally, they send some troops into Africa to try to keep one of the puppets in power. But, I mean, the grandeur of France really has passed, and now as they move into the European Union, the France of old will soon disappear, don't you think?
La grandeur de la France, you know, the only thing that they're talking about really is the era of Napoleon. The French have lost 3 wars against the Germans in less than 100 years, 1870, 72, 1914, and 1940. They've lost colonial wars in Vietnam and in Algeria since then. But what they're very good at is going into Africa and propping up dictators and taking out democratically elected leaders who have opposed them. Just 5 years ago, the French took out the president of Congo, who was democratically elected, and they replaced him with a dictator. And they did it why? Well, guess what? It was because that democratically elected leader had decided to contact, he had the chutzpah to contact Exxon about an oil deal instead of keeping everything in the family with the French.
No way, you're speaking Mobutu or...
No, this was in Congo. It's Negesse Sesso.
Oh, okay.
And they brought him back into power and deposing the democratically elected president who was there in the interim. And it was because, this guy was going to make a deal with Exxon, and the French couldn't tolerate that.
All right, fine. Well, if there's anybody out in the audience who has a question for Kenneth Timmerman, who certainly is very knowledgeable on all these subjects, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got John calling from Syracuse, New York. Hi, John. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. The Spanish thing that just happened, we have Moroccans being picked up all over the world, and Morocco used to be a colony of Spain. Matter of fact, I was stationed for a while in Kenitra, Morocco. And I wanted to know if your guest has any ties between the French and their former colony, Morocco.
Well, you mean ties in terms of the terrorist networks?
Yes, because these Moroccans are being picked up and being accused of this bombing in Spain.
Yeah. Well, what's very clear is that the North African community in France, which is comprised of Moroccans, Tunisians, and Algerians, has been thoroughly penetrated and infiltrated by Al-Qaeda. And Al-Qaeda is operating throughout the slums around Paris and these housing projects where the French police dare not go. The French counterterrorism judges, who I know and I've been dealing with for years, they know about this. But, you know, they're a bit, they have a hard time cracking down on it. The only thing I can tell you is that with the lack of respect for civil liberties that they have in France, when they get a lead, an investigative lead, they just pull in everybody they possibly can. It's kind of like, in Casablanca, arrest all the usual suspects.
What would you say the population in France, what would you say the percentage of it is Muslim?
That's a good question. Normally what people say is somewhere between 10 and 12%, so you're talking somewhere between, let's say, 5 and 8 million people out of a population of 55 to 60 million.
Okay, fine. So let's. One of the things that really seems to be infuriating a lot of people over there is this directive now that a Muslim women can't wear scarves and Christians can't wear a cross. What in heaven's name are they trying to accomplish? I mean, you know, I think if Muslim women want to wear a scarf on their head, why shouldn't they be allowed to?
Well, I'll tell you what this is, what the background is on this, Dan, and it's pretty complicated. The French president. Named a commission about a year ago to study this and look at it very closely. And they actually handed down I forget how long the report was. It was quite lengthy, you know, 50 or 60 page report, and I read most of it, but I don't remember how many pages it was, about this whole problem. And they put it into the historical context where you have non-clerical schools and lay schools, in other words, non-religious schools, a public school system that is non-religious. And what they found was that the Muslim community is being dominated by radical Islamic clerics, and they are using the veil, they are imposing the veil on young girls as a way of imposing radical Islamic fundamentalism on them. And the girls who don't want to wear the veil are being harassed by gangs of young men in the pay of these clerics, and either raped or kidnapped or beaten up or harassed in a variety of different ways. And one of the reasons for banning the veil was, in fact, to free these women from the grips of the Muslim clerics. Now, you can argue that that is the wrong way of going about it, and I think that's a valid argument, but that is part of the problem. Part of the what they were trying to address was the growth of radical Islamic fundamentalism in France, and they thought that this was a way of stopping it.
Of course, there are real problems all throughout Europe with the growing Muslim population because, of course, they are very prolific, and of course they seem to be a growing population, growingly militant, and of course we have the same problem here in the United States. And my fear is we're going to end up in the same sort of a situation here in the United States that they have in Europe, where you can begin to play one group against the other. You'll end up with a situation like you have in Canada, two ethnic groups, one the French Canadians, one the others, and you just play one group against the other.
It's a good point, Stan, and a few things in our favor where we're lucky. First of all, we have a much smaller Muslim population from that part of the Middle East. In other words, the Middle East in conflict. Probably the majority of American Muslims today are black Muslims. And then the second largest, in other words, Americans who have converted to Islam. It's a very different form of Islam than you're looking at in Europe. The second largest group is from Iran, and Iranian Americans came here specifically to escape terrorism. They were the first victims of radical Islamic fundamentalism, and in fact, I believe, and I've always said this in public, I believe the Iranian American community, are our greatest asset in the war on terror because they know about it firsthand, and they've suffered from it. And then, really, you've got a very small population that come from, in this country, that come from Muslim population from so-called Palestine, from the Palestinian areas, from Jordan, from Syria, Lebanon, and Egypt. And amongst that population, you have an even smaller part that believes, that accepts this radical Islamic ideology. Unfortunately, here's the problem that we've got, is that they have grouped together in interest groups, such as the Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, or the American Muslim Council. And they pretend to speak for the entire Muslim community, but in fact, what they've done is hijacked the mic.
My concern is the Wahhabi influence within the mosques in the United States and within our prisons, where they are preaching revolution, and we're paying paying for these people who are being indoctrinated in radical forms of Islam.
You're absolutely right about that, Stan. I couldn't agree with you more. The only good news is that it's the numerically speaking, it's a very small proportion of the Muslim community. That's the only good news.
Well, let's hope it stays that way. Well, we're just about out of time. It's been a fascinating hour, as always. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners this afternoon?
Well, I think that one of the things I've tried to put out in this book, The French Betrayal of America, is I've tried to put the French betrayal in context of how good an ally they once had been during the Cold War. And this shows just how far down Jacques Chirac and de Villepin, the foreign minister, have dragged France. I think France really faces a choice. What kind of world do they want to live in? Do they want to live in a world where they make deals with dictators and terrorists, or do they want to live in a world where they are promoting freedom and expanding the territories of freedom around the world? And I think I know what Jacques Chirac has chosen, but I'm not sure that the French people are going with him on that.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Ken. It's been always a pleasure, and we'll look forward to talking to you on one of our other programs. I think we already have you lined up. So thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Stan. It's always a great pleasure to be with you and your audience.
Bye-bye. Okay, this is Dr. Stan, and we'll be back here in just a moment or two to wrap up this afternoon's program. I hope you enjoyed it. Kenneth Timmerman's really one of my favorite guests.
Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I just want to remind you about the Institute of the Constitution. You know, one of the most carefully kept secrets in the United States is that America was founded by Christian on Christian principles. Our laws were Christian, and our very foundation of our society was this concept that our rights come from God, and that governments are instituted among men to preserve our God-given rights. That's what it says in the Declaration of Independence. But we don't mention that in our schools anymore, because the fascist element that would create an authoritarian system here has taken God and prayer out of our schools and mention of the idea of creation away from our children. Well, what we need to do is get back to our fundamentals. The Institute of the Constitution will teach you about the Christian heritage of America, the foundation of our Constitution. Call them at 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068, and ask for a kit, purchase a kit on the Institute of the Constitution, set up a study group in your church, in your community, to begin to teach people about our heritage, the heritage we're losing so rapidly. And then we carry a number of books. One is called The Faith of Our Founding Fathers. It's written by Tim LaHaye. And we have Abandonment Theology by Jean Chalfont. We have Original Intent by a young man who's written a number of books, David Barton, and this one goes into this whole idea that there is a wall of separation between church and state, and of course there never was any. That's one of the finest books we have. They're all relatively inexpensive. We all have a four-tape set called The Foundations of Our Freedom. It will give you an understanding into our heritage. Let me suggest that these books, The Foundations of Our Freedom, The Faith of Our Founding Fathers, Abandonment Theology, and Original Intent. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I have to remind you that our programs are primarily listener-supported. And if you believe that there's a problem, if you believe that America's future and freedom are in jeopardy, if you believe that they are intentionally shipping our industries and our jobs offshore because they intend to impoverish the middle class, they are intentionally allowing the aliens come in from south of the border and they want to give them citizenship to take away your jobs, if you believe that this process of globalization is part of a move towards the New World Order and the New World Religion, then we hope that you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because we're on the front lines of this battle 5 hours every day on radio and shortwave and internet and satellite, where people are hearing the truth, many of them for the first time. Let me suggest some books which will help you to understand what's going on. The New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies by William Still. That's The New World Order, The Ancient Plan of Secret Societies. To understand the occult movement and where the Luciferians and the Satanists and the New Age fit into this, it's The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. These are books we have in stock, and we've just bought a supply of them because we think they're so vitally important that you understand what's really going on. And then, of course, we have four tape sets on Aleister Crowley and his friends, on Satanism and deliverance. We have a four-tape set on the pagan agenda. We even have a pagan agenda special. Because behind everything that's going on today are spiritual forces, dark spiritual forces. If you haven't yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. You can get it by itself for $12.95 or with a video and an audio tape and the book for $29.95. And we want you to copy the video. We want you to copy the audio tape. We want you to get the information out all across America. Because the only way we're going to be able to slow down what's happening is when the American people realize there is a plan to impoverish them and to take away their freedom. And perhaps their lives. And we're dealing with vicious people. And if you have never seen the copy of UNESCO Courier, November 1991, where Jacques Cousteau was quoted as saying, we've got to eliminate 350,000 people a day. You have to understand, they have no value for human life. That's what so much of what's going on today. That's why we're not really trying to stop the AIDS epidemic in Africa. Do you really honestly believe that we could have done such a poor job stopping the AIDS epidemic in Africa or in the United States unintentionally? Doctors know how to stop epidemics. We can stop all sorts of SARS epidemics and influenza epidemics, but we can't stop the AIDS epidemic because it's a very efficient means of population control. And we're dealing with organized evil. And when you understand that, you can understand the drive for abortion, the drive for euthanasia, the outlawing of DDT, because it was saving so many lives from malaria. And if you haven't gotten my video on population control or a four-tape set on population control, you need to get that information, because the life you save could be that of a loved one or your own. So our number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our website at radioliberty.com, where you find the various items we sell. You'll find our newsletters posted there, and you're welcome to pull them down and copy them. You can listen to our programs live 5 hours a day, and then you can listen to the archives after that. And you won't get anything accomplished, but you'll get the information that you may need to save your life and your family and your freedom. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers. We ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.